And arguments like this are largely backed up by what school students of science tell us. Bobby Serini from Planet Science again, followed by some further comments from Michael Rice.
There is a bit of a preconception that students must find science really dull. And, you know, various studies have investigated this, and I think there's a slight tendency to expect people to think science is really boring in class or just in general. But what we found when we did this survey was that the three words you use most commonly to describe science, out of a range of 10 or 12, some were neutral, some were negatively geared, some were positively geared, the three that came out way ahead were useful, relevant, and interesting. The use of these kinds of words in preference to others gave us a clear indication that actually students recognise that science is interesting. It is in itself inherently useful to understand and to apply, and it's a fundamental feature of the everyday world. So I think it's dangerous territory to talk on behalf of students. What we found when we let them talk for themselves was different from what we ourselves were expecting. And I think it's very easy to not hear the voices of people who aren't usually asked what they think. And students were saying to us, people never ask us what we think. We are never given the opportunity to say how we interpret it. And what we saw from the kind of responses we were getting were very insightful, very mature, often very complex ways of looking at what they were learning and why they were learning it. And science was a subject area that they had very passionate responses to, bearing in mind that the students who answered the survey were a mixture of science students and non-science students. So I think we have to be very careful about saying students perceive science in a particular way. It's not necessarily what we think it is.
The question as to whether there's a crisis in school science education can honestly and simply be answered, no. If you want crises in schools in England and Wales, you don't look at science. If you want to look at curriculum areas, there are bigger problems in other curricular areas. For example, subjects like geography and history have been pretty hammered through not having as privileged a position in the national curriculum as science and English and maths have. If you want to look at problems in the number of students studying a subject in the sixth form, although physics is worrying, there are greater problems with mathematics, to be honest. If you want to look at problems with students losing out on whole areas of the curriculum, you look at the performing arts and music and the visual arts. Now, that is not to say that there are no problems with school science. There are. But there are problems that, for example, QCA has been consistently trying to address for about a decade now, and their problems were more or less everybody agrees what the problems are, and that's encouraging. You don't find the science education community in England and Wales being deeply divided among itself. Now, there's a possibility that that might be because of complacency, but I believe more positively it's because people do realise what the problems are. If you look at international studies, you find two things. You find in terms of what children learn in schools, we do quite well in science. But one of the really interesting things is you find that the most so-called developed countries, not just England, but also, for example, Japan, Scandinavian countries and so on, are the ones where young people have the most negative attitudes towards science. I'm not talking now about school science, I mean to science in general. The countries where people are very positive about science are many of the less developed countries in the world. And it's quite interesting to wonder what will happen in the next few decades. There is one interpretation, some might say it is a slightly alarmist one, that what you'll find in blocks of countries like the European Union is an increasing public distrust of science, which will slow down any of the so-called benefits that science might bring. And that it might be other areas of the world that will see the next generation of benefits in science.
Now that you know, a key feature of Block 1 is to address the purposes of science education, and in particular, how it relates to the issue of scientific literacy. Here's what Michael Rice has to say about that issue.
The good thing about the notion of scientific literacy is it gets away from people thinking we've just got to teach pupils science, and it begins to make one ask a little bit more, well, what do we mean by scientific literacy? And then one's into a game where one has quite a lot of discussion and debate about precisely what would constitute good scientific literacy. And there are some people who have quite a high-level rigorous understanding of that phrase, and that's why you end up concluding only 10% of people are scientific literate in many of the so-called advanced countries of the world. One example I find particularly interesting, which will be one that many people understand, is something like children's health. Now, you get taught quite a lot in school science about health, but for most people, the time when they really become expert about children's health, in other words, have a high level of scientific literacy, is if and when they have children themselves. At that point, of course, it becomes extremely important to one to understand about one's child's health and to be able to see whether the so-called professionals to whom one is talking, GPs and others, really, in your heart of hearts, understand. And many people get quite good in that sense at critiquing science in action.
And of course, now is a time of rapid change and also one of hope and opportunity. What types of activities and experiences should be more prominent in science education?
I think I'd like to see variety of experiences within the same course for a group of children, group of pupils. Different things, different ways of learning attract different students. And I think you can say, yes, we'll have discussions. Yes, that will make science more attractive to this group of pupils. More practical work would appeal to these. More hard science, getting at the underlying principles, would appeal to another group. Within any class, you're going to have some of each type of pupil. Therefore, I think you have to make sure that what you're offering caters for the different needs of the different pupils and offers a varied experience, offers them the opportunity to express their own ideas, but also offers them the opportunity to look at some of the established ideas of science. I think we're selling them short if we feel that they can be scientists in the sense that their views on some of the established ideas of science are equivalent to scientists' views in these areas.
I'd like to see more of three things in school science. I'd like to see more choice, both for pupils and for teachers, in what the pupils are learning and what the teachers are teaching. I'd like to see more diversity in lessons. We are going that way, which is good, but the days of one size fit all are over. And thirdly, I'd like to see an assessment system that manages to reward the learning that we really value, and that is a big problem still.
Challenges and problems there are aplenty, and you have the advantage of studying such an important issue in unsettled, challenging times. But all three of our contributors end on an encouraging and positive note.
There is a tremendous amount going on. You know, we've seen teachers taking on board new ideas, students being given the opportunity to have their say and to contribute more and more to what's going on in the classroom and in the science curriculum. And I think over the next few years, it's going to be an incredibly exciting time as organisations start to pool their resources better, start to communicate better, start to talk with teachers more directly. We've got a fantastic new initiative, which is the National Centre for Excellence in Science Teaching, which will bring together all the teacher training and actually provide a much more coherent, joined-up approach to giving teachers access to new ideas and materials. So all in all, a very exciting time coming up, and we're really looking forward to seeing what students and teachers will make of it.
I'm actually quite encouraged at the way in which science education is going. The days when people thought all you had to do was sort out the curriculum, or all you had to do was to get new well-qualified people to teach science are over. We know now it's a very multifaceted problem, and there are a lot of organisations working at various levels to try and move forward. That's not naively to believe that everybody's going to enjoy every moment of every science lesson from now on, but I think things are moving in quite a good direction, and I'm encouraged.
I'm hopeful. I think one of the key issues is the supply of well-qualified, good science teachers, particularly in the physical sciences. And the organisation of an assessment system which can allow for more creativity, more diversity than we have at present.